For March the 15th, 2024, we talk about Expeditions, a Mudrunner game, The Outlast Trials, Samurai Showdown, and much more. Welcome to Level 493. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm Moxie.
And I'm Jella Prendez.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Welcome back, Jella.
Hi, I'm here. Yeah. How's it going?
We're happy to have you here. It's going all right. Yeah. What's going on with you?
JellaCon happened. Yay! Fanfare. So, several folks, including Moxie, came to Houston, folks that listen to my show slash hang out in my little server and stuff. There are like 10 or 11. Some people were kind of like in and out. And we did a bunch of stuff. We went to NASA. We went and did a Spartan sprint. And now Dave has the Spartan bug in him. And now he wants to do the Super and the Beast within the same calendar year so he can get his trifecta. And then he said he wants to do the Ultra next year, which is the 50K plus endurance marathon style OCR, ultra marathon style OCR. Of course, I did that several years ago at this point, and I also had done a trifecta previously. So, like, this is like, oh, we're back on my BS, are we? And now I got a friend. Okay.
Yeah. I know OCR as optical character recognition.
Yeah, what is OCR?
Obstacle course race.
Okay.
A Spartan, a Tough Mudder, a Savage Race, a Mud Run. These are all things that are obstacle course race.
Double dare.
So it is other Christmas residents.
There you go.
No, I made that up on the spot.
Wow.
Yeah, I sounded made up on the spot, but that's fine.
We'll know, Dennis.
It's fine. You don't even want it. Oh, my God. There were so many dad jokes from non-dad figures this past weekend. And some dads and some non-dads. It was a lot. And I was just like, wow. There's Dennis energy. There is Phil Holmes energy going on here. The spirit is with us right now.
I just love that the 30-ish mile race, or, you know, more than 21, they basically, I love that they don't have a Spartan marathon.
No.
It's like, oh, yeah. Yeah, I forgot about that. Yeah. Athens actually wins its wars.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, I know. It's like, definitely I would have picked something else for a mascot, too. But at this point, they are so deep into it. And Spartan is so, like, internationally known and everything.
Oh,
they're never
the
going to change it.
So much.
Did they start up right around the time of 300? Was it just in the oeuvre?
I think it's been around longer than that. I don't know offhand. They've been around for a long, long time, though. And they bought out like everybody else. So Spartan is like almost the only OCR company anymore because it's very costly to try to organize these things. Yeah. So,
yeah, they definitely do the dumb, you know, what Spartans, what's your profession, whatever.
Yeah.
And I think I meant Zeitgeist, not Oeuvre.
Yeah.
Get my French and my German mixed up there.
What is an oeuvre? That sounds like, I don't know, like robotic vacuum.
Oeuvre d'oeuvres.
Yeah.
It's kind of a.
Okay. Yeah.
The kind of like holistic offerings. What's out there?
Yeah. One second here. Yeah.
Yes. And by the way, the first Spartan race was in 2007, 300 was in 2006.
Oh. Really? Wow. Okay. Well, there you go. That's probably what they were doing. I thought they were older than that.
Cool.
Oh, then again, I mean, it is 2024. Let us remember how long it's been.
Yeah. No.
I understand you getting confused. 300 is such a timeless classic.
Oh, that's such a shit movie.
You know, it's funny because I was just listening to a podcast that was bringing up that movie again, and it wasn't even about like it was about Man of Steel.
Yeah,
that movie, and then 300 got mentioned. So
I saw someone did an animation, the scene where Leonidas is telling the guy with the deformity that, you know, oh, you can't fight with us because we all fight in formation. And the guy's just like, bullshit. I've seen you guys. You just run around in circles in slow motion, stab people.
So, busy, eventful weekend, it sounds like.
Yes, absolutely.
Oh, cool. Anything else?
We'll just go with no.
Okay. We'll just go with
I mean, you did find the greatest fighting game ever, but that'll
we'll
have
talk
to
about
come
that.
In. Yeah.
We'll talk about that. But Moxie, you missed some of the best parts, which I'll have to describe to you later. Anyway,
okay.
How was your weekend, Moxie, since the last time you were on the level?
we're going to get you on cross-examine here. Yeah.
Oh, right. No, this... The actual Jolicon was amazing. It was great hanging out with people. I survived Jala trying to poison me with nasty vegan food.
whatever.
No,
it was so
not
good.
Actually. No, we ate an amazing. I say that as though like I don't mostly eat vegetarian now.
No.
We ate at an amazing vegan taco place. Well, Mexican place. So, I don't know. I feel like there would be more to say, except that I honestly couldn't tell a lot of the food from just, like, regular tacos and stuff. So I can't even be like, oh, yeah, I had great, like, I don't know, mushrooms or something. Because it's like, I had chicken that they insisted was not chicken.
Yep.
But less fun was the actual trip.
Oh.
Apparently Dallas got hit by like a typhoon or something. And
yeah,
so
it was, yeah. The travel woes. Mm-hmm.
Yes, everyone's flights coming in were just massively delayed.
Yeah.
And then going out was kind of cutting it short, so I took a Lyft, and halfway through the ride, someone rear-ends the Lyft.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, no injury, everything's fine, but, you know, that's obviously a little stressful when, when, you know, you're trying to get there in time. But yeah, no, the actual event was fun. I loved hanging out with people, you know, loved seeing the city and playing some games and stuff that we'll talk about in a bit.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Sweet.
Dennis, what have you been doing? I haven't heard from you in a long time.
I know.
So, except for talking about Godzilla movies and stuff.
Yes.
Godzilla!
Well, I'll start there, which is I decided to dive into the MonsterVerse since I am on the record as kind of being out on the MCU just because there's too much that I don't care enough about to keep up on.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I had a hankering for like a big monster movie. I've never watched anything Godzilla related before, but went and saw the 2014 one. Loved it. Saw Kong after that. It was amazing. Not the Jack Black version though.
Right, right.
Which you know, would have been a big mistake.
So not the good one?
Hey now. someone in Jala's Discord said that, you know, Kong Skull Island is the closest that the series gets to being a horror film.
Hmm.
And it is better for it. And then I just watched I think the next one is King of the Monsters, which was kind of a letdown. It just like the first two felt very, very focused and, you know, cheesy and funny and, you know, a big monster movie, but at least they kind of knew what they were doing. King of Monsters just felt like my toddler showing me all their toys. Like, I've got this one and this one and look at this one, but I want to put it over there. And this one's here. And, you know, just like parading monsters across the screen without any real coherency.
No.
Yeah, so I've got one more. I think I've got Godzilla versus Kong to watch before Godzilla XCOM? Kong?
XCOM. Wait, Godzilla XCOM sounds rad.
Godzilla,
oh, yeah.
Oh,
how is
that
not
that
a
now.
Thing? I mean, we literally have Godzilla Dave the Diver, so.
All right, I mean, the XCOM modding community is so amazing. They'll be on it.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's Godzilla versus Kong, which I have yet to watch and I hope is better than King of the Monsters. And then there is coming to theaters, Godzilla X Kong New World Order. And I am like, you know, so in now, I'm like refreshing, waiting for the movie tickets to go on sale so I can get the IMAX. I backed off of doing 3D because I feel like while I love 3D, the like Avatar is the only movie that's really worth it.
Mm-hmm.
So going to go see it on IMAX and all that day and date in the theater. Yeah, so that's one thing been getting into some monster movies.
So
yeah.
which version of Godzilla versus King Kong did you watch, the US or the Japanese?
What I have out from the library is I guess the US version.
Basically who wins?
I don't know. I haven't watched that one yet.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So, yeah. Depending on which version, who wins is different.
So like the most recent movie, they had two different endings.
Oh, no, I'm talking like black and white era.
Oh, okay. No, I have not seen that one, unfortunately. But yeah, I will be diving into that and then going to the movies, which is fun.
You should also check out like some of the Weather Beetle people, the like Kamen Rider, some of those sorts of things. Get the full. Oh wait, Jala, you probably know this. What's the name for it's like Japanese special effects movies?
Special effects movies. That's a very vague.
You're not thinking like kaiju movies or anything, are you?
No. Tokusatsu?
Sentai warrior type movies? Oh, no.
T-O-K-U-S-A-T-S-U.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Live action films and television that make heavy use of practical special effects.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So it's the squares and rhombuses thing. Not every kind. Not every. Tokusatsu is a kaiju film, but every kaiju film. I mean, unless somebody's lying to us, is a tokusatsu.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
It's like they fake. Oh, go ahead.
I would like to see it actually not the other way. It's not like they're lying to us because there's actually a Godzilla. They're lying to us because there's just no special effects.
Yeah.
Like there's literally just a guy there that everyone insists is Godzilla.
That's the Godzilla stage play. It's very, right. You kind of have to suspend disbelief with the cast.
Contemplative. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I didn't mention that I watched the first zombie movie from Telugu cinema, but I did. But we are already like way deep into banter, so I won't talk about that now. Maybe next time if I remember.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean that is a healthy banter for me, and I'm eyeing I guess it's a week from now, because I think it's either the 19th or like the 22nd or like basically a week away is the launch of the movie.
Woo.
Hmm.
Exciting.
Is that Easter weekend?
No, Easter weekend is 2 weeks from now.
Yeah, two weeks from now for Easter.
Yeah.
I'll figure it out. Hmm. But yeah, that is me right now.
Cool. And
well, what about you?
I'm the only one left. Yeah, not a whole lot. Just continuing to play around with those electronic drums. Going and finding the obscure songs that people have made charts for is really neat. So, yeah, that's pretty much it. That and working and personal medical stuff that I don't want to talk about.
Yay!
Well, you just did.
I alluded to it. Everybody has personal medical stuff that they don't talk about.
This is true.
Yeah.
This is true. I'm having personal medical stuff right now, technically.
Yeah. It's just
a heart too. Beating. Yay!
So what is the weirdest song you have drummed or found drum machine thing for?
So just today I was like, there's no way that they have anything off of David Bowie's last album, right? Like, you know, the singles off of that are very strange. Black Star is the lead one. It's like a 10-minute long, I don't even know what to call it, but it is not, you know, David Bowie, you know, kind of glammy rock kind of stuff, you know, like you think of from the 70s. And I just did a search and they've got it. It's all charted out. It's hard as hell. you know. So yeah, I think that's like the weirdest thing. The furthest thing away from like rock music, I guess. So yeah. But that's all I got. There's no sense in prolonging the banter if I do not have anything otherwise notable. So I think we should talk about the games we've been playing, what with the grind, and then move on to the multiplayer and the end boss. And let's get started with
The Grind.
The Grind, where we talk about the games we have been playing over the past period of time or so. Jala, you've been away the longest, so I will throw to you first.
Yay! So I think last time I mentioned that I was playing Lunar, the Silver Star, the Sega CD version, in a browser.
Yes.
Which is great. I finished it. So that's one thing. I did that. Got that knocked out. And then I had to set down the Lunar series because the recording for that is going to be like way later in the year.
Yeah.
So then I had to start Shining Force 3 because I'm doing a podcast about that sooner.
Mm-hmm.
So I have not talked about Shining Force. Well, I've talked about Shining Force 3 on here to some extent, and I've also talked about it on my own show on the Fire Emblem IP episode where I was talking like in broad strokes about what Fire Emblem is like and what tactical RPGs are like. And I mentioned that on there because it's a real weirdo. I will go ahead and kind of explain a little bit about it here. So it was on the Sega Saturn, and I think it was released in 96 maybe. Final Fantasy Tactics came out just a little bit after it. So like, yeah. I think it was the same year, but like a few months later. So Final Fantasy Tactics hadn't come out yet, or anything like that. So for a few months until Tactics came out, Final Fantasy Tactics came out, it was like one of the more complicated narratives that you would see in a tactical RPG, because this particular game is a weirdo in that it does something that .hack would later do, where it has a game that is spread off across multiple discs,
mm-hmm.
but unlike .hack, which had four different installments with the same characters and stuff, the Shining Force approach was scenarios 1, 2, and 3 each featured a different main character with a different part of the story, mm-hmm. and each one has their own Shining Force, and each game kind of blends together. It sort of does a thing that like Resident Evil 6 would also later do, where like the narratives interweave. And so like in Resident Evil 6, you play one Leon and Helena's campaign, but then you sometimes see Chris and Piers or Jake and Sherry, and they just kind of pop up and they have these little interactions, and then they go about, you know, doing whatever they're doing on their part of the story. And it's the same thing here, where that's exactly what's happening with Symbios, Median, and Julian. They kind of come in and out of each other's stories, and they are helping each other to an ultimate end goal. But unlike any other game that I've seen that did anything at all similar to this, it's the only one that I've seen where it has the final battle. It culminates in this one final battle where all of the Shining Forces and all of the characters are in play fighting the final battle.
Mm-hmm.
And also, like, the things that you do from one disc to the next will affect what areas are available and what characters are available. Certain characters can die in one game or another or never be found, and then they're not available to play. And, you know, depending upon whether or not you destroy stuff that's in the path of a certain walkway or whatever, that area may or may not be available to you either during that one game or in a future game and that kind of thing. So yeah. There's a lot of overlap and like things that you do matter from one disc to the next.
To take another, to take another Resident Evil comparison, but like that sounds like a different version of the zapping system from RE2. Right, where items that you mm-hmm. picked up in one wouldn't be there in the B scenario, right?
Right, right. So it's not quite to that degree, because like the ways that the stories interact insofar as like what choices matter is primarily about which recruitable characters are there for you in each of the installments, and also certain areas will or will not be available depending upon what you do. But there isn't like a, if you take an item now, you're not going to have that item later. There's not any of that.
Yeah.
So there isn't like a resource penalty. It's just a matter of, well, if this particular character dies because you failed to save them in the first game, then when you get to scenario two, a different guy pops up and you still have a unit, but it's a different unit,
mm-hmm.
that kind of thing. So there's that. And I am a little over halfway through. I've had a lot of stuff come up recently, so I had to slow up playing a little bit. But I am still thoroughly enjoying it. It is, excuse me, it is definitely like chunky, early 3D graphics. It is not an aesthetic that I particularly like because I grew up originally in sprite era.
Yep.
So I was very upset that they didn't just do sprites.
Mm-hmm.
But when I was sharing video of everything, like there were so many people who were just like, oh, I love this aesthetic because it's what they grew up with. Mm-hmm. Or it's, you know, just like an era of gaming that they really loved. And so, you know, like it's kind of interesting that way. Like I have zero affection for it. And I'm like, this is so ugly. You know? I didn't like it at the time.
No.
You know, I still don't like it. And the voice acting in the English version of Scenario 1 is terrible. I should say that Shining Force 3, the reason why nobody knows about it is because Scenario 1 was released in the US, and then basically the Saturn or the Sega of America kind of messed up everything, and the Saturn kind of died off in America, and then we never got Scenarios 2 and 3 in English.
Mm-hmm.
So what I did, little fanatic I was back in the day, is of course I got all the import games and I was playing them. And then I went to ShiningForceCentral.com where they had like some very lovely fans translated the scripts.
So you were doing a read-along kind of thing.
I was doing a read-along because they had the scripts with the little faces so you know who is talking and what they're saying.
Oh, that's wonderful.
And Yeah. And then there's also, and this is my friend Moogie's whole thing. Like, she's the one who runs Shining Force Central, and I've been going there since, you know, when I first played Shining Force so many years ago. And mm-hmm. now I'm friends with Moogie. It's mm-hmm. like, it's this whole lovely thing. But, yeah, there are people in her community who then eventually started working on patching the game, like patching the ROM of it so that you can play it in English,
mm-hmm.
The Shining Force 3 translation project. They're still futzing around with this
mm-hmm.
And still tweaking it and doing improvements to like fix up bits of the game and things like that as well. So I have never tried to play it because I have the original discs and I have my Saturn, so I play it on original hardware. However, if folks are interested in playing this game, because it is really baller and cool, you can go to the Shining Force 3 translation project. You can either Google that or go to ShiningForceCentral.com and get that information. There are links everywhere for that.
Fan translators are doing God's work. There's nothing in it for them except the love of the game, and that is a pure and good thing.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, way back in the day, because like it was really like I there were shows and stuff that I watched, like anime and things like that I watched. But it was really when I was playing video games, like I was playing Shining Force 3 and I was playing like the import versions of Lunar. And I really wanted to know what the original script said and stuff like that. That really got me into learning Japanese was like the gaming part of it. So, you know. Anyway, that sent me on a whole life path that took several years of different pursuits.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's been a fun time. I remember so much about this game, and I have no problem whatsoever just sitting down and playing it like every single day. And I enjoy the hell out of it. It's one of my favorite games. So, you know, of course, there's that. So on that note, the second Dishonored episode is going to be out this Friday on Jolly John's Place. So talking about something that I was playing every day for a while. So that'll be coming out.
Is that one about the miscellaneous media associated with the Dishonored?
That is so the first episode that released last month covered our generalities, like our overview of this series and just kind of talking broad strokes about the art and the gameplay between all of them and things like that, the world and all of that. And then we talked about the story for Dishonored 1. We don't do like a deep, deep waft dive on like, here's all the details of it. Yeah. We talk about it in broader strokes and talk about the levels and like what stands out the most. It's, you know, the way that I approach it when I'm doing these is more like, let's talk about like, what did it do for video games? Where did it sit in the history? What are your experiences and memories with this kind of thing? Like, what's its lasting impact on you and on gaming in general, mm-hmm. that kind of thing. So the second episode, the one that's coming out on Friday, the same day that this level drops, will be the one that covers the narrative bits for 2 and 3, or, well, I say 3, Death of the Outsider.
Mm-hmm.
We talk a little bit about Dishonored 3 and, you know, our hopes and dreams and stuff like that.
Yeah.
We go into all the random stuff, like the novels. You get to hear me read a little tiny clip of it and lose my mind a little bit. And, you know, we also then just kind of camp out on lore and talk about like some cool lore bits about just the world and the setting and everything like that. There's also for patrons of my show, a bonus episode that is just about the connections between the Dishonored IP and, of course, Deathloop, mm-hmm. and, you know, all of that. And then we camped out on Dishonored 3 on that episode as well, having not remembered at all what we talked about when we recorded, you know, the episode coming out Friday. So, you know, like there's two different places to hear stuff that we talk about with Dishonored 3.
But it's shocking how universal that experience is of podcasters. Like I say it and then it falls out of my brain.
Well, it's like I think about things, but then like when you're in the conversation, like the context. So when we're talking Dishonored 2 and 3, the context of, you know, what I'm thinking about when it comes to a potential Dishonored 3 is going to be different than the context of we're talking about Deathloop.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it being like the future of the Dishonored world. And we're talking about how did we get from the Dishonored IP to where Deathloop is. So when you're talking about that, then you have all these other ideas about other things they could do. And then, you know, it could be anything. But like, you know, we're talking about, okay, well, it could be a prequel. It could be like an interquel between, you know, like bridging the gap between everything,
mm-hmm.
whatever. But either way, that's kind of a big tangent from talking about Shining Force, but games that I play a lot of and will sit and play for hours.
Yeah.
So, so I've been doing that. And then at Jollicon, we were playing first, before most people got there, I was playing Bubble Bobble for Friends. It was me and Dave and Juliet and Adam Bucherry. Mm-hmm. And we were all playing together. And that game, like I played it with Dave the entire way through and I talked about it on a level sometime or another.
Mm-hmm.
But like when you have 4 people, it is chaos. It is chaos. You don't know what's happening. It is wild. It's interesting how different it is when there's actually 4 people on, you know, in the room playing together. Yeah, I think it probably plays best with 2, but it is an experience to play it with 4,
mm-hmm.
For sure. Yeah. But I don't really have anything else to say about that. That's still a fun, cute little game.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, I love Bubble Bobble, so there you go. And then the last thing that we were playing, and it's funny because I brought my Switch, everybody else brought all their stuff, and we were all like, yeah, we can co-op stuff, and we were just, I put my Switch in the dock, and we were just looking at it, and then I don't remember who did it, but somebody pulled up Samurai Showdown, the one that's on my Switch, mm-hmm. and we just started digging into that. Now, I talked about that on a level at some point as well.
You did.
But I'd only played like 90 minutes of it, and I was just kind of giving broad impressions of it and stuff like that. But then we got to sit down and play together. And at this point, I feel like I should throw to Moxie because Moxie was very interested in this game.
Mm-hmm.
First off, I would like to say I now, my headcanon is that the title of the game is actually Samurai Showdown, the one that's on my Switch.
It's named like a visual novel.
Right, yeah. Right.
These subtitles have gone too far.
Well, you know, it's like the Switch equivalent of We Have Samurai Showdown at Home.
Well, they actually have all the older Samurai Showdown on there as well, but I mean like the newest one.
Yeah,
sure.
And the Switch version of it. The Switch version. Oh, yeah, of course, the Switch version of it. Sure. we'll go with that.
It'd be weird for a virgin to have to have already developed a preference like that, but okay.
Right. Yeah. Right.
So anyway, continue.
Samurai Showdown is the sword fighting based versus fighter that is not Soul Calibur. And everyone's a samurai except for some random, like, fencers and shit.
Right.
Which is kind of weird. But my main takeaway from this is just how incredibly strangely animated some of the characters are.
Oh, I have to share. I have to put a link. Y'all gotta see this. It's pretty good.
The character I played as, I think, was supposed to be some sort of shrine maiden.
Nakoruru, yes.
But and she's got a hawk that supposedly can help in combat, but that bird just watched as I got my butt kicked, so screw that bird. But the thing that's weird is that her movement, walk cycle is just kind of bunny hopping.
Yep.
Just boingy, boingy, boingy like a bunny. And also as about 5 frames per second. whereas every other character is completely normal. Just her, she is, doing the Matrix thing. Just kind of slowly, frame shifting through the air.
Well, and not only that, but then you have Chum Chum, who's the, like, cave girl, cat girl, and then there's a bunny lady, and then Baikin from Guilty Gear shows up, and the walk that they gave her in this game, I linked you in the backstage.
Oh, was this Booby Lady?
That is Lettuce Breast Boobily. I've never seen someone breast boobily, but it happened. It happened. She did it.
That is the most accurate way to describe her walk. I'm sorry.
That is exactly what she's doing. She's breasting boobily. It's a thing.
This is the exception that proves the rule.
I have never seen it in real, like ever animated or anything, but this takes it. This is Cole, please describe for people what this looks like.
So I need to let me see here. Double check this link. Blah, blah, blah.
He's
I looked
checking
at
that Jala's not trying to hack him.
Right. She's right.
Yeah. No. Just my. sorry. I need to like mute this tab. I think.
Yeah. For sure.
Let's see here. Oh, it didn't mute.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Okay. So, sorry if that audio came through, and also you had to listen to that. Yeah, I took a look at it, and a torso is not supposed to point that way, I imagine. Like, there's a certain, confidence in, holding your head up and your shoulders back and all of that. But the, let's say, corona of her breast is pretty much on level, like parallel to her nose, and she's swiveling her shoulders like one would swivel their hips if they were trying to walk sexy. And there is a significant amount of animation in the chest area. It seems unwise to present one of the softest parts of you so prominently when blades are in play.
Well, and then inexplicably, there's also this maid character that I do not believe Moxie got to see, but there is a maid character who hops on one leg and, of course, is extremely animated.
This is not the bunny hop character.
This is not the bunny hop character. This is a different character.
Also, the bunny hop character is different than the character that is literally a bunny girl. Yeah. Also, I feel like the breasting boobily definitely draws the eyes in this, but that tends to make one miss that the person she's fighting has a dog companion who apparently backs up by simply doing backflips.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's
Wait, Galford. There are other things in this video?
Yeah, like you don't even notice there's anything else happening because it's just like you can't help. But and the thing is
there's also a bear that walks to the middle of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Well, like, Baiken does not walk like that in Guilty Gear. This was a choice that was made.
Although, I feel like this is Guilty Gear, game that gave us the Jacko pose. So, I mean,
yeah,
there is precedence.
Yeah. Well, so the thing about the Samurai Showdown game that I will say, and I said it previously when I talked about this game, is that everybody has a very vastly different fighting style, and it actually, like, there's so many different fighting styles and ways to engage with it, and pretty much anybody can pick it up and play it. And that was kind of like shown this weekend, because there are people who don't play fighting games at all who got to play and beat the crap out of other people, and it was fine. Like, everybody, you know, was on pretty even footing, because I was picking random, you know, other people were picking randomly, and, you know, we weren't sticking to a character and really learning it. We were just futzing around with it. And yeah, it was like even footing for everyone.
I also liked the Kabuki guy, who's, you know, apparently entire motivation is that he wants to just, like, become the greatest Kabukier ever to Kabook.
Mm-hmm.
and so he just kind of, like, hops around and, you know, acts kind of like a monkey.
So much hopping.
Given that my last exposure to Samurai Showdown was probably the second or third one in the arcade at Kingsgate Mall in Mansfield, Ohio, God rest its soul. My last exposure to it was there. I don't remember a lot of track laid for exactly how waifu horny this is. just aesthetically.
Yeah.
Oh,
wait, the dude with a dog is apparently a knight?
Okay.
Just, you know... Oh, yeah, from San Francisco?
Okay.
Sure.
Yeah, why not?
Well, that wasn't immediately obvious to you?
but as long as it's fun, yeah. It sounds like you had a good time. You know, ideal circumstances. You always worry when you pull out a fighting game. My worry would be, if I pulled out a fighting game, would be that somebody was going to come in and then just... You know, it's like the guy who brings his own pool cue to the bar.
Yeah. luckily, none of us had any idea what we were doing, so nope. It kind of worked out.
Yeah, because like I think when I first played a little bit of it, like the 90 minutes or so that I was messing around with it, that was like probably at least a year and a half ago. Like I have not picked it up and played it since, because it got buried in my backlog on my Switch, because backlog does not stop. Yeah. So.
Nice.
So, yeah.
What else you played, Moxie? Or was that everything that you had, Jala? Did you just...
Yes, that
okay.
is it.
Cool. What else
played? So with Jalacon, I haven't played a ton. I have gone a little farther in Pacific Drive. I'm now, I think, in the process of kind of exiting the mid-game, you know, getting into the final run.
Okay.
Let me think here. I'm not sure of anything real, you know, real different that's happened. I guess my car has gotten much stranger.
Okay.
I've unlocked more of the kind of super science-y parts for it. So, for example, I have... several of my doors are anti-corrosive versions of the doors, so they sort of have these like sprinkler heads all over them to spray like an alkaline solution to, you know, counteract corrosives.
Yeah, fight liquid and then, with liquid.
Yeah, exactly. Liquid and let liquid. then the fenders are all covered in lead plates, which you would think would be really bad for the gas mileage, but, you know, who knows? And then I've got, like, lightning rods all over it, both to protect it from electricity and to recharge my batteries.
Might as well.
My goal is to get, you can get a electric engine.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm going to experiment with that. But in order to make that viable, you have to get there's a bunch of different ways you can generate electricity. And so I'm going to try to, you know, kind of build a, I guess, a equipment loadout, for lack of a better word, around that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that's most of it. Like I said, just kind of, you know, continuing on.
Yeah. Are things looking like you're going to have to smush that car in a compactor?
No. Why would you say that? I'm sad now.
I'm saying that it's kind of the arc they're building up. It's pretty, when they say, oh, it bonds to you, it just kind of seems like that's the direction it's headed.
It's going to get car rabies. I'll have to take it out back and shoot it.
Yeah. Car rabies is just when your car gets ants into it. You can't get those out of there.
I don't know, honestly. I am quite honestly not quite sure where the story is heading to. You know, it's definitely explaining some things. So I've found out, like, what the car is, what a remnant is, that sort of thing. However, it's still very, very hand-wavy.
Mm-hmm.
I think the last thing I can say without really spoiling stuff is that I really like the characters they've gone with, and really like, you know, they kind of do the character growth where, you know, they start out, you know, none of them like each other, and then mm-hmm. they, you know, form a grudging respect, that sort of thing. And I like the way that it's written. In particular, Oppy just become, you know, continues to be a ill-tempered curmudgeon, but becomes a lovable ill-tempered curmudgeon.
This is the cranky old woman who runs the garage workshop that is your home base. Is that correct?
Yeah, I mean, the main thing actually is it's not quite explained why she runs the garage, because the main thing is she's like the lead scientist of the project.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, there's like a line I loved where, you know, just they're doing the whole like, oh yeah, you know, we're such a great team, you know, imagine how we could have been, you know, if things had gone differently. And she's just like, oh, honey, there's no reality where I wouldn't have slit your throat.
Oh, fun. So,
yeah. You know, just very, very endearing, very, very well written. You know, I still maintain that Friendly Dumpster is the true hero of the game, though.
Oh yeah,
honestly, if there's any character that's going to get thrown into a trash compactor for dramatic purposes, it's going to be the Friendly Dumpster.
And for ironic purposes.
Yeah.
No. I mean, like the Friendly Dumpster, which is the dumpster that belch when you return to home base, especially if you die, the dumpster that belches out items, at random, mm-hmm. it kind of is the star of the show of that, because like, it's the only thing that keeps you out of a death spiral, actually.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, the only character other than the car and, other than the car that you actually see.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm still hoping for, like, the reveal that, like, I don't know, Oppie's been, like, a robot the whole time, or, you know, yeah. Something weird like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anything else besides Pacific Drive?
Nope, that's all I've done. I've downloaded the updates for Helldivers so that I can get back into that, but just have had the time.
And roll with the shitty mechs.
I am kind of torn. One of the known bugs is that if you turn while you are firing rockets, the rockets can apparently like clip through your geometry and just kill you. Which the thing is, that's totally on point for the setting.
They built themselves a pretty good ontological excuse for bugs.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And for fighting bugs.
And it's so funny. I had it's like schoolyard tales. Like I had a random in one of my lobbies. Tell me about that. Like I was checking out the mech for the first time. He's like, yeah, just be careful. Don't turn too fast. It breaks the mechanism and you're like, it'll detonate in your thing. Like completely in character in universe. I had no idea it was a bug until you just said that, Moxie.
Yeah, I mean, I would not be surprised if we see a petition to like keep it in at least some form.
Maybe. Nice. I'm going to throw it to you, Dennis, since it sounds like you had some Helldivers, but you don't necessarily have to lead with that or talk about it at all.
No, it's the perfect alley-oop. Not least of which because I think today they released another patch. So their first big patch was about a week ago, and people went berserk because it made the game way too hard.
Okay.
There were some unintended consequences where Bile Titans and Chargers, which are the two most difficult bug enemies, were spawning at way higher rates than they intended, and a whole bunch of other smaller things. But basically, people were feeling overwhelmed and the most popular meta weapons had been nerfed. And the game got harder, so what are you even supposed to do? So they, despite the community being really shitty.
Oh my God.
At the drop of a hat. Like in the first week of this game, I was like, oh my God, it's another Deep Rock Galactic. Like this is the most fun, happy community. I think we talked about it on the show. And then that patch hit and they turned into rabid vermin. I don't understand.
They reacted so violently to one particular post by somebody at the company who was saying like, hey guys, you know, this is a process. I forget exactly what he said, but like such an outcry, like a pro consumer rights, blah, blah, blah. The gamers won't stand for this kind of thing that like they changed their entire communication strategy.
Yeah, that one of the devs did kind of snap and troll the community a bit.
Right.
And even said he did as much, and he since apologized and I think is, fessed up to it as best as you can in the situation. But the reason he snapped in the first place was because the community was being so shitty. So yeah. It's like this chicken and the egg weirdness. Anyway, they patched the game again today, reduced the spawn rates of those very difficult enemies, and tuned a bunch of other things, and the game is in a much better place, at least in the limited amount I got to play on the new patch. Notably, we liberated the mechs, and you just mentioned those. And for a while, there was a thing active where everyone got a free mech every drop. So you didn't have to bring a stratagem for it. It was just available. And they've done that with other stratagems, so that was very cool in a way to introduce them. But that has officially dropped off. So you're down one mech, the game has been balanced back to a good place. And I played a little bit on the suicide mission difficulty, which is like the lowest in the top tier of difficulty. There's nine difficulty levels in this game. That's insane to me. Like, especially when people are doing so much complaining about the game being too easy or too hard. It's like, I guarantee you are not at 1 or 9. Like, fix it yourself, you idiot. like, tweak that. So anyway, but that felt in a good place to me as I played. Now there are reports of flying bugs in the game, and I am loving, because they did this with the mechs too, where apparently they have the ability to just kind of like drop new features into certain people's games before they're out in the public. And it's like a Bigfoot sighting, right? Like, the community starts talking about it. Again, the schoolyard tales. I saw bugs flying on this mission. What are you talking about?
Yeah.
Well, it was in the cover art. No, they're, you know, this, that, the other thing. And the CEO has come out and vehemently denied that there are flying bugs in this game. Why would you say that? That is lies and sedition.
Okay.
Did he say that might be a bug?
Yeah. but, thou doth protest too much. And so I'm looking forward to that in Helldivers. Yeah.
Cool. What else?
One last thing on Helldivers. I had a friend from the network, jump into one of my games, where I was playing on that suicide level difficulty. It might have even been pre-patch. And it was a complete, you know, cluster. We lost the mission. And then I got back to the lobby. And you can't see their level while they're in game, but you can see everyone's level while you're in the lobby.
Mm-hmm.
And they were level 5. And I'm like, oh my God.
This is not going to go well.
Well, and this highlights a very big problem. You can't see what level your friends are playing on before you join their lobby.
Yeah.
Just a huge UI oversight.
Right.
And hopefully that person doesn't have shell shock too bad.
Yeah. It just seems like a way to scare people off. Like, oh my gosh, this game is too much. Yeah.
So they're continuing to tweak. Arrowhead is, and, I think they are doing live service right.
Mm-hmm.
And I appreciate that. I hope the community will come around and appreciate them as well.
Hopefully. It's not the hot new thing, you know, it, generally that shit dies down. Also, mm-hmm. They are doing live service games right so far.
True. Yeah. the part of being continually developed and changed is you can screw it up at any point. So
yeah,
we'll see.
I just don't want you to get Warzoned again, Dennis.
I hadn't thought that until you said that. Oh, man.
Oh, and don't forget about what was the PvPvE?
Oh, the cycled.
Yeah.
It's cycled, Warzoned, and hopefully not Helldove. Yeah, so I think I mentioned this last week, but hadn't had an opportunity to play it. A new gauntlet mode launched for Diablo 4.
Yeah.
And this is... For a second, I thought you were going to say a new gauntlet, and I was going to be excited.
that would be cool. This will have to do.
You talked about this a little bit last week, I recall, kind of the premise of it. Yeah.
Yeah, so a seeded dungeon. It's the same every time you play, and you're competing for score, how quickly you can tear through it, rather than just trying to survive. There's different shrines throughout that will reset all the enemies. So it's basically pathing from shrine to shrine to get all the most dense mobs kind of in quick succession. Got to play it, had a lot of fun, I was intrigued. I got my character to 100, and took that into the gauntlet. It was still difficult enough that I died from time to time if I wasn't being careful, but it also changed up the way that I built my character. Just like putting it to that pressure test. Revealed ways I could make it better that I hadn't noticed before. So I swapped out, I think, two of my different powers out of, I think you've got a tray of 5 or 6.
Mm-hmm.
And that, that's not a small change to a character build. It changes the gear that you're using and the affixes that you're looking for. But it was kind of cool that the gauntlet is what pushed me to really, dig in and try to discover new things about the class I was playing.
Mm-hmm.
So I appreciate that. I played until I got into, it's all the rank brackets, bronze, silver, gold, whatever, but it's all different creative names that I can't remember.
Yeah, so, nonsense.
I got myself up into the third bracket, which felt like a really good run for me. Yeah, and then I was kind of done. They reset every week though, so I'll have to check out the new one, and we'll see what kind of staying power that has. But it's a good time. Unfortunately, the top of the leaderboard is already dominated by people who have found exploits to get a better score, which is unfortunate. And hopefully Blizzard will squash that and keep it fair. Mm-hmm. In terms of competition, because the big promise of this mode is that if you're in the top 10, you get your name on the list for the entirety of the existence of the game, that people can see you up there. So
yeah,
major bragging rights at stake. I hate to go it to someone who is the most cheaty cheat faced of everyone.
Yeah, give them an asterisk at least.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah, so that's Diablo 4. And then I've continued to dive in to Expeditions, a drive-in game.
A Mudrunner story?
A Mudrunner story, yeah.
It's funny that the title would be infinitely improved if they just switched the trail. If it was just a MudRunner story, colon, expeditions.
Sure, why not? And I'm like literally now checking if it's actually called a MudRunner.
No, it's a MudRunner game. Yeah.
Thank God. I was about to lose my mind.
Yeah, I was making a joke out of just how ridiculous the whole thing is.
It speaks to how dumb the name is that felt plausible. Anyway, a dumb name, amazing game. And as I've gotten further into kind of the structure of the game, there are a set number of expeditions for each area. And these areas are massive, and have a ton of kind of side quests effectively inside them. And so you take an expedition and gear up for that. And that's your main objective. But once you accomplish that, you can choose to stay in the area and try to knock out as many side quests as you can. And this game has perfected the art of baiting you into trying to do just one more objective than you're actually equipped to do. And so I don't think there's been a single run that I haven't ended either upside down with no way to right myself or out of gas in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
Just because that pull of like, well, there's an airdrop over there I could probably get to.
Yeah.
And then I'm there and I could build a bridge, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Like it is excellent at kind of pulling you to try to push just a little further.
Yeah. If I flap my arms a little bit harder, I might get closer to the sun. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. And I think though you do have to be cognizant that this is, you know, the part of the fun of the game is that it lets you do that, you know. It dares you to fly close enough to the sun to burn your wings to continue what you're alluding to. Because I've seen a lot of people
wings now.
Oh, I wish.
You do get drones to like survey stuff.
You do. And I have done some flying, not on purpose, but man, you can really get these trucks high into the air if you drop off a cliff right angle.
I think you should just be able to like tie all of the quadcopters to your truck and have them help pull you out of whatever.
Okay. I want to see the math on that. Like, How many quadcopters would it take to lift a Jeep Wrangler?
300, but they can only do it for 1 inch for 1 minute.
Fair enough. Yeah, and the environmental cost of all the batteries used is basically instant Armageddon. But yeah, so that is a very zen experience if you're expecting it. I was about to say I've seen people very angry online that like it's too hard to tell exactly what you need to accomplish an objective. It's too easy to get stuck. It's too punishing if you want to like reset and keep going rather than just abandon your progress to that point. And I think that's a little bit just in the expectations going in. Like this game dares you to try to go just a little further, and it's a friendly dare, but they're going to hold you to it.
Yeah.
When you bite. So I've been very much enjoying that. Still haven't seen a single patch of green. The first one, first area is Colorado. And it's just pure shale and desert as far as the eye can see. Mm. And then the second one is Arizona, the Grand Canyon, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And same deal, just a very barren landscape so far. So you would think, especially like in somewhere like Colorado, you'd be given a little more variety. And I'm told it's in there. I'm just still waiting for it to show up.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, that's me. That and monster movies, right?
Yeah. Sweet. For me, this is going to be pretty quick. I only have one new thing, and it was kind of a disappointment, but it's on me for having a misconception about what kind of game it is. This past weekend, I streamed The Outlast Trials. This is a horror stealth game that is multiplayer. The Outlast series is controversial and one of the very definitions of not for everybody. Intense gore. There's just a lot of nasty stuff in there. This is the third entry in the series. And instead of having a single player campaign, the conceit is this is a prequel to the previous games. It is set in 1959, kind of at the height of the Red Scare. and you are somebody, one of many people who is abducted and taken into this, you know, torture warehouse to, they call it like, be prepared for rebirth. It's to make you do little like capture the flag things with a psycho cop chasing you with a stun baton. Yeah. So this is for up to four players. I thought that I, would be okay playing it because I Googled like, hey, can you play the single player? I say, yeah, no, it's tuned. You can play it. And the problem is that this kind of really standard, what is standard by now, first person stealth horror game, doesn't necessarily gel very well with the open level design and the, kind of simple objectives, that it's giving you. I kind of already ran up on, the variety. Like there are only two like boss characters who come out in any given mission, the psycho cop guy, and a person who carries around a puppet that is also a dentist, and when she opens the puppet's mouth, a drill comes out and she tries to drill you with it.
Oh no.
Yeah. And so yeah, I was walking around levels that were way too big, covering ground that four people should have been covering, and mostly getting spotted and running and finding a hiding spot and waiting for the enemies to go a different direction. Yeah, so this I see this as partly my fault for trying to play a multiplayer game alone. I didn't want to go into a lobby and play with randos on a stream because who knows what they're going to say, right? Mm-hmm. Like to have a little bit of control over that. Didn't want to ask anybody else to play it because it's like a $40 game, a little bit much to buy, I would say, on a lark like that. And also, it is hard for me to imagine a friend group of four people where there is more than one person who has the stomach for this.
Oh, is it what, gory or
it's gory,
ill-tempered?
It's gory. There is also like, you know, nudity. There's some, you know, pretty rough sexual language and implications in it, you know, and that, you know, was fine as a single player experience. Not for everybody, granted. You know, this is the game where the expansion of the first one kind of made me throw up a little bit on stream. But like, that is, you know, that can be a part of a balanced horror diet to, you know, play in some extreme spaces or whatever. It's just not as interesting to me when it is not a linear story-based experience where you're finding out cool stuff. When it is just mission packs and occasionally you find a dossier that explains a little bit about some aspect of the world, it is substantially less interesting to me.
So there's no actual story or anything? It's just
lore.
The thing over and over again.
Yeah, it's just lore. And at the end, I mean, actually, just through the documents you find, you learn like the purpose of what these experiments are. It's probably pretty clear, given the fact that it's in the Red Scare, what they are doing, trying to make Manchurian candidates. But yeah,
that's I don't know. It sort of feels like So this is very much not my genre, so maybe I'm just not getting it, but it sort of feels to me like the more sequels, I feel like the more sequels I see in one of these series, the more I feel like, kind of like, I'm not sure you actually have anything to say. I think maybe you just like making torture porn.
Can you give an example of other stuff? Are you talking like horror in general, or are you talking horror games? Because I can say that about Saw, Hostel, any number of things.
I would say that about Saw, Hostel, any number of things.
Yeah. I was just wondering if there was an example from games that you could point to.
I mean, this would probably be the main one.
Yeah. Outlast 2 was good. I liked it quite a bit, cause they changed things up. It wasn't all indoors, you know, you were out in a desert. It was kind of folk horror-y a little bit. There were interesting things about it. This just kind of feels a little like serial numbers filed off to me.
I just wonder, you know, like, is the actual, like, you know, exploitation film, you know, shock value thing actually additive? Like, could you make this exact same game and, you know, not be that?
I think that the ick factor to it and the extreme discomfort does heighten things. You know, if it is able to trigger disgust, it can make you really want to run away from the thing you're running away from, right? You know, I also am, you know, I'm an avowed fan of the Saw franchise, from its highs to its lows, from its mids to its lows, right? You know, love the shit out of Hellraiser and stuff like that. So take this as a, you know, as a matter of taste. I do believe it is it is additive, but it is also, sure, you know, the you know, one of the definitions of not for everybody.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. It does sound like, though, like not having a story is kind of a, I don't know, kind of misses the boat.
Yeah. It's a bummer. It seems misguided to me, especially because they were pretty good coming up with and communicating a story in 1 and 2, and to just kind of not try a little bit. It feels kind of like a square peg, a round hole kind of deal.
Does this seem like this is an attempt at making a live service game?
So when I open up a game, if there are live service things, my eyes do not see it. It's literally Westworld. That doesn't look like anything to me, you know, just because it's kind of like banner ad blindness. Like, I'm not going to buy anything. So why even make a note of that? I'm not sure if there is real currency, real currency that you can buy and get cosmetics or whatever. Wouldn't be surprised, because that's one of the main appeals of doing something like this. It would be very depressing if the studio decided that this was their big shot at, you know, making their nut, right? You know, was by kind of just compromising the very kind of core of what this is. All that said, the core Outlast experience, you know, like a lot of games of this ilk, the, you know, run and hide and seek horror games, mixed with some walking sim kind of stuff. We live in a post-Amnesia the Bunker world. Right. And Amnesia the Bunker is especially good because it adds mechanics, like actual honest to God, there are multiple ways to deal with these situations, immersive sim mechanics to it. If something else isn't playing in that space, making things a little bit more varied and textured, it is really hard for me to get like super excited about it. Like the only thing that I saw was that after after a few missions, just kind of going as yourself, you unlock what are called rigs, which, you know, you spend the in-game currency or whatever to unlock one of four different like special abilities that are on a cooldown. Like one of them is like you can place a blinding trap that will blind the enemies, or, you know, a limited healing in an area of effect. The one that I picked because I was playing solo and it seemed useful was X-ray vision. Just really brief. You can see people through walls, so you can tell if the coast is clear, you know, if you're going to make a run for something, right? That's kind of cool. And you can upgrade those, but also it's I don't know. It feels a little bit like just tacking MMO stuff onto it. What with the cooldown abilities and stuff, you know?
How do they justify that from like a in-world standpoint?
Oh, it's super science. They've got an engineer who rigs that stuff up. Yeah. You have night vision goggles that they, you know, mount to your head with a drill in the opening. But
I mean, that's kind of cool. As a side note, I looked up and apparently there are no microtransactions or paid DLCs at this time.
Okay.
Yeah. So it looks like not live service. So that's good at least.
Yeah. It's been in early access for a very long time. I waited. The reason I picked it up and played it on the stream, A, because I like the series, but B, because it just hit 1.0. It left early access last week. So
yeah, I'm not gonna lie, this is kind of disappointing, just because like this from the trailers, this actually looked really cool. It looked like it might be a game I want to check out, mm-hmm. but that was entirely premised on, like, this being a, you know, story-based game.
Yeah, no. it's disappointing, right? Maybe I would have a different experience if I played it with a bunch of other people, but that would also require me being an entirely different person. So
I mean, I feel like though if you get into you know, a game, you know, pickup group, and it's just people like screaming homophobic slurs and whatnot, like that sounds entirely matching with kind of the vibe of this game. Like
a little bit.
That seems like that'd be completely within universe.
Yeah. We call it the bad Helldivers. Yeah.
Ironically, the Helldivers were not the bad ones.
Oh, any other questions about that? That letdown?
No.
Okay.
I'll be interested. Like these kinds of things, it's always interesting to look at how it evolves over time.
Mm-hmm.
Like you can, you know, have a game kind of miss the mark, and be like, well, they'll probably patch it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe. Yeah, I mean, I bought it, so I'll keep tabs, like Steam will surface updates if they do something that seems like it addresses any of the complaints that I had. Nothing against dipping back in and trying it. So, mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, there's always room. Yeah, always room for stuff to change.
Go on.
The other thing I've been playing that I don't have an awful lot additional to say is Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. Continued playing that just in the odd gaps in my schedule, and it's still good. I finished up the Grasslands region, kind of the first area, by fighting the big serpent in the swamp on the way to the second place. In the original one, it's called Midgar Zolom. Which is a weird thing for it to call. It's a bad translation of Midgar Sormer, serpent, the serpent outside of Midgar, I think. But that was a good boss fight. They continue to pull out really good gimmicks. Like this one was, if you don't dodge an attack that it does periodically, one of your one of your characters in your party is taken out for a short time until it's belched back up. Like it gobbles one of them up. Then they come back a little bit later. This is a mechanic that was present in the original Final Fantasy VII. I believe in this very fight, like it could just tail whack somebody and the 3D model would hilariously just like spin off into the horizon.
Whee!
Yeah, yeah. But that was a good fight and got into the Mithril dungeon, which was in the original, it's like a one screen dungeon kind of thing. In this one, like there's all kinds of cool, it's not one screen. It's much bigger. Like your party gets separated at one point and you've got to like do little puzzles kind of between them. And there are more details about the world, like who built this mine? What was it used for? You see places where like people were set up for like breaks and stuff, which is extraneous, yes, but also, you know, detail that they didn't have to add. I will always like a sense of place and level design, so that's cool. And now I'm in the Junon area, outside of the other big city in the game where the Shinra military is. This is a mountainous region as compared to the grasslands. You get a different kind of chocobo. It's hilarious because different colors of chocobo can do different things in Final Fantasy VII. So like you would have to get, I think it's a black one or a green one. I forget what it was in the original to like go over mountains on the world map, you know, and it just runs over it. No, the gold one can do everything. It can run over the ocean. Yeah. But in this one, it is a black chocobo that can climb things by literally hooking its talon into perfectly flat vertical walls and then just kind of like walking up it like the wall is its ground because it made it, because it's made out of metal and it's a metalloid maniac attached to it with magnetism. Yeah.
I mean, that seems legit.
Yeah, it's just super goofy. I don't know. continue being.
Wait, how does red numbers not fall off?
I didn't pan over to look at them, you know. So we'll see. But I am, you know, just earlier today went around and activated all of the towers in the region so I could, you know, prioritize and figure out my angle of attack on all of the little doodads kind of thing. Oh, something cool. Each region has its own summon materia that your little cyborg son slash best friend Chadley can make a materia for.
Not Chadley.
I love Chadley. Chadley's so good. I love Chadley, and then the girl Chadley that Chadley made to help you with battle intel.
I do not know about girl Chadley. Stop making sense.
Yeah.
Wait, is this two words? Is he Chadley?
No, it's just. Chadley. C-H-A-D-L-E-Y. Chadley. It's Chadley.
Oh, that's even worse.
It is pretty bad.
Yeah, he's kind of like your mission control. Like, he gives you, like intel on the regions and stuff. The premise is you're going around and collecting data for him, and he's pointing you to things. Chadley's the best, and I love him. He's good. But
oh, it's a little femboy.
Yeah. Androgynous at the very least. Yeah. What I was saying about the summon things, like, you can, go just fight Chadley's simulation of the summon monster to get it. But if you go out and do stuff in the world, there are little shrines you can go to and do like a little rhythm game tapping puzzle, whatever, to like make that fight easier. But also make the summon monster stronger when you get it. Which is an interesting trade-off.
So, question. According to the wiki, he is an intern for Shinra. So, are there missions where they are just, like, make him go get coffee or whatever?
No. In the first game, he was working with Shinra. He's actually a cyborg that was made by Hojo, kind of the lead R&D person there. But he was working with you to undermine them by basically not developing the like wild materia that he can develop for them and instead giving it to us. And in this one, he has escaped from the city and he has now gone fully rogue and is trying to, by activating these towers, trying to assemble a network outside of himself so he can communicate and see everything in the world.
Oh yeah, nothing bad will come of that.
Yeah. But Chadley is perfect, so that's fine. So continues to be like a little bit of a mess, you know, just in terms of, you know, this stuff just doesn't quite fit together a lot of the time. But the overworld encounters with, you know, the enemies continue to throw new gimmicks at me, like new ways to, you know, get them into the pressured and then staggered state. And if it can keep that. If it can keep that pace of just showing me new shit up over the course of this huge game, then that will be a monumental achievement. So any other questions about Final Fantasy VII Rebirth?
No.
Jala, have you been like paying attention to this? Have you like what you nope. knew Chadley when I saw him, but
oh, I know Chadley. I have seen a Chadley. Okay. I caught somebody playing some of it and popped up and looked at it. It's still sitting in my backlog and will continue to until I stop assigning myself very long games.
Right. Yeah.
That makes sense. Wait a minute. I feel like you buried the lead. Chadley has a PlayStation VR headset that he uses on you.
Maybe. I didn't notice it being especially modeled after the PSVR2, but it is a little it is virtual reality glasses that he puts on you to take you into the combat simulator. Yeah. Also the little tool that he gives you to go out and scan things in the world is called the Chad unit, CHAD. When he hands you when he hands it over, it does the standard, you know, item pickup notification. It says you received Chad unit. So took a screenshot of that. That was fun. Yeah, I don't know.
That's pretty good.
And that's all I got. That's all I got for now anyway.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and then you answer it. Dennis, what is the question that you asked the nice people?
Yeah, it's con season, so I want you to assemble your dream panel. You can assemble any roster, not just of people from the games industry, but also pulling from game characters themselves as well. Who's on your panel, and what is the topic of discussion?
Yeah. The photo on this is Gary and I several years ago. At yeah.
Hope that was cool. That was the only one I could find.
Oh, yeah, that's fine. No, I didn't realize I was a hand talker. Never thought of myself as that. But I totally am. So seeing this is very funny. Seeing me mid gesticulation, trying to,
Just assumed there was some topic that was required dimensionality in your description.
No, that's literally just the way that I talk. I do it when I'm sitting at the microphone, here, actually. It helps me get from word to word. Regardless, moving on to our listeners' answers, Case writes, Robert Woodhead from Wizardry, Doug Bell from Dungeon Master, Kazuya Nino from Etrian Odyssey, and Hallister Blackcloak from the Mad Mage of Undermountain, giving a panel on Dungeon Crawler and Dungeon Design. If the person not being alive was not an issue, I'd also add Janelle Jacques.
I mean, technically, Hallister's not alive.
Hmm?
Isn't Hallister Blackcloak a lich?
Wait a minute.
Sure.
I'm confused. Are these the designers of those games, or are these characters in that game?
I think we got some of both.
I don't know. I was assuming that Hallister Blackcloak was not a real person's name.
Okay.
Confirming he comes up as a character.
Yeah. it's MMO. Huh.
You did this to us, Dennis. We don't know.
This is the freedom of the format here.
It is, yeah.
Case is taking full advantage of it.
Okay, but, Well,
Some of these have to be real, though, right? No one chooses to be named Doug Bell.
Yeah. Kazuya Nino is real. Huh, sorry, just throwing that one fake one in there is a super weird flex. the Mad Mage of Undermountain. Okay, that makes sense. I thought the Mad Mage of Undermountain was a game. Yeah, Case, that was a good prank. Good prank there.
No, yeah, that's like the giant Underdark dungeon that's under Waterdeep, I think.
Yeah, okay, regardless.
Also, I do love, like, this is made even better by the fact that it's a whole bunch of real persons and a literal archmage.
Yeah, yeah.
I this falls under the category of, hold on, I need to look something up.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, this is funny.
I'm not sure if I can laugh. If I laughed at this, I would not be able to explain why. So I need to find out. I'd watch the shit out of a panel about dungeon crawler design.
Hell yeah.
Yeah. And dungeon design. So Hallister would be. Okay. Sorry, I got wrapped around the axle, and that is, hey, Jala, what does David say?
David says, Commander Shepard's crew from Mass Effect 1 through 3 would be pretty cool, but if I was being a sicko, I would have Mario, Link, and Kirby have their own panel, as they are quite a talkative bunch.
Ha! Ha! Yahoo! Oh, no!
Yeah. David understood the assignment.
And you see, the thing is that, like, one of my answers was going to be like all the protagonists from Shining Force, because nobody would be talking. It's just dot dot dot.
All of Commander Shepard's crew would be pretty crowded, unless some of them got thinned out in two.
Yeah, I was gonna say, it depends on how good of a commander you are.
Oh gosh.
I have to say, just, is Joker your pilot?
Yes, Joker is.
Just him talking about pretty much anything would probably be entertaining.
Yeah.
Seth MacFarlane, right?
Seth Green. Seth MacFarlane.
Seth Green. Damn.
Yeah. Famous Seths, they run together.
Yes.
Yeah. Also, Seth Green is a voice actor on one of Seth MacFarlane's shows. So.
Yeah.
Moxie, what does Peter say?
Peter says, so At first, I felt like I had to know a bunch of people. Now I realize I'm just overthinking things. With that being said, I could go for a panel all about napping in video games. It would feature both Sigmeier and Siegward of Katarina, both who love to take naps for an extended period of time, and Hypnos from Hades. The panel would start out super engaged for maybe 3 or 4 minutes, and then everyone would be asleep. Also, realistically, this would be the one panel scheduled for after lunch, so a siesta is very appropriate.
This would be super welcome. Conferences can be really hectic, so yeah.
Billet is like a guided meditation.
Yeah. let's see, Dennis, what does John say?
John says, panel topic, cool explosions versus moral righteousness. High Chaos Corvo and Heavy Weapon Spec JC Denton debate Low Chaos Corvo and Non-Lethal Focus JC Denton. Is Flamethrower self-denial really about moral superiority or just about saving inventory space? Do guards actually have souls? Should you stick to the prod? This is great.
JC Denton on a panel, that dorky weirdo, that would be amazing. Yeah. And I will finish out here with Rookie, who says, I'd love to get Corey and Lori Cole, Al Lowe, Ken and Roberta Williams, and basically every Sierra Online game designer on a panel to tell stories about the making of all their games. I'd also love to hear what they do different now with 40 more years experience and advancements in game design to draw from. Yeah, that also would be good. I want to know exactly how much cocaine was going around in the right. Sierra offices. Yeah. you know, just for starters, I think. Yeah. So I'll give my answer. I want to get the Bachelor, the Haraspex, and the Changeling from Pathologic on a panel to talk about loot systems in games. and why garbage cans are the best place to find the good shit. Yeah.
I mean, if Pacific Drive has taught me anything, that definitely tracks.
It holds. Yeah. Like any one of these for real people would just be me naming game developers that I think are nice and good, and I would just want them to be up there and talk about being nice and good. And really, I would just rather just kind of be in a room with them and talk. So that's what I can come up with.
It's less all of a panel, more of a hangout.
Yeah, more of a hang, you know. So that's me. Jala, how about you?
So I have this combination: The Outsider, Solaire, Phoenix Wright, and Majima. I don't care what they're talking about. I just want these very disparate personalities in the room together.
I'm trying to see if the Outsider and Majima could even share a space. Yeah, right. there are multiple friction points there where this could go very badly.
Exactly. That's the point. It would be very interesting.
The first GDC panel with a body count.
Right?
Oh, gosh. Moxie, how about you?
So a couple of ideas. I think Mask Shepherd and Femme Shepherd on a panel would be kind of entertaining. Just like all the different ways a shepherd can be a shepherd, have one of them on the panel.
Yeah.
I think Kojima just doing like a watch party of Escape from New York would be pretty great. But I think what I'd go with is if we're going with fictional characters, I think I'd go with Astrofo and Nico Arc. Just two like just completely rubbish goblin characters.
But from what games?
That's Fate and Melty Blood.
Okay.
Both owned by the same company, so it's somewhat plausible. But yeah, they are both just like ultra cringy like characters that the fandom loves.
Gotcha. Okay. And Dennis.
Just chaos goblins.
Dennis, how about you?
Yeah, I would get a video game sidekick panel going.
Oh.
Specifically like from that 90s era where you had Daxter and Clank, maybe throwing Kazooie in there, like all those kinds of mascot sidekicks, just to get the real down low on what was going on behind the scenes. You know they have some wild stories.
Yes. I mean, Kazooie maybe not. I believe that bird spends most of its time in a backpack.
That's fair.
Yeah.
What do they do to entertain themselves?
Oh, true. Yeah. Let's see. Yeah. Thank you, everybody, for answering. It was a fun prompt, and we got some fun answers. If you would like to participate in these in the future, you can go and join the Duckfeed community group on Facebook and watch for the prompts to go up on Monday afternoons. Thank you, Dennis, for posting this one this time.
Mm-hmm.
The end boss.
Now it is time for the end boss, where we talk about things that are going on in the world of video games and how we feel about them. I need to scroll back up in the thread. Dennis, what's happening with the Mario movie?
Yeah, we have a lot of shitposting in our backstage this week. So.
Well, no, relevant information to the conversation, I would say.
Yeah, yeah. They've announced the next Mario Bros. Movie in probably the drabbest way possible. There was kind of a corporate news release detailing that Illumination and Nintendo would be working together again on another Mario movie, with the only real indication of what might happen is just Miyamoto saying, "We're thinking about broadening Mario's world further, and it'll have a bright and fun story."
Yeah. The exact wording on it, I believe, was there will be a new movie in the Mario world right, as well,
yes.
Which has people speculating about a Donkey Kong movie. Could be any number of things. Mm-hmm. This is not very surprising. They could have just posted, "We would like to make $1 billion again."
Yeah. This feels very much more oriented to ensure investors that they will continue to print money.
Yes.
Rather than anything intended to get fans excited.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, they've definitely left themselves the wiggle room to go further out in the Mario universe. I think it feels like there's more to explore just with the main characters versus going straight to Diddy Kong or whatever, especially the way they've blended these disparate characters together.
Yeah.
Give us a Waluigi movie, you cowards.
I was going to say, give me a Luigi's Mansion movie, you cowards.
Oh, that's okay. So good. Yes. Any of those.
Actually, I think what I really want is a Splatoon movie. The movie would probably be great, but mainly just because the resulting, like, fashion merch would be amazing.
So they've put out the date of April 3rd, 2026. So we're still more than 2 years out from this. The first movie was great. You've heard us talk about that. I look forward to seeing what Illumination can do with the franchise again.
Yeah. We'll see. In 2 years. Mm-hmm. Moxie, did you have a story?
I did not.
Okay.
I have been recovering from Dragon Con.
Dragon Con, huh?
Dragon Con, yes. Jala is the true dragon.
Jala doesn't have one either. Do you?
No, I absolutely do not. I was okay. Asked last minute to show
yes,
up.
Yes, so you no. were, and you very graciously did. I'm really happy that you're here. Yeah, you didn't have to do that. But I just wanted to make sure that I didn't skip over you as a matter of course.
No. Yeah. Oh, I guess I can say this, though. There are some folks who are doing a Kickstarter. It is 200% funded, and it continues to grow for a game called God's Shard Chronicles. And I will be actually doing an interview with one of the folks from that, and be dropping at the end of March, so a couple more weeks from now. But anyway, the game is going to be like a mishmash of like inspiration from several different types of games. So Lunar, Secret of Mana, and like Link, Zelda, I think Adventures of Link or something like that. One of the ones with Link in the title that's a Zelda game. And anyhow, so it's going to be like an action RPG, and it will have local co-op and all of this kind of mess. But John Truitt, who plays the voice of Galleon from the Lunar games, is going to be playing the character Argent, and also the person who did the songs for the Lunar US release is going to be singing the song for this game and a whole bunch of other stuff. Anyway, like they also have Noriyuki Iwadare, who did the soundtrack from Lunar. He is going to be doing the soundtrack for this game as well. Wow. So like they are seriously pulling a lot of folks, industry folks, and like, you know, a lot of nostalgia factor, and like they love those games and they're bringing all of that to it. The Kickstarter is live until I believe it's like April 2 or something like that. So check it out. Mm-hmm. It is cool. And again, I will have further details on that coming up on my show at the end of the month.
Can you give the title of that game again?
God Shard Chronicles. God Shard is one word.
Gotcha. Okay. I just wanted to make sure that I got it in the notes for there. My story doesn't have a link to it. It's just something that is happening that people should probably be aware of. They're doing it again. Gamergate is rolling back up. Never went away for a lot of people, but it's happening. There's really no calling it anything else at this point besides, you know, coordinated harassment campaign of people singling out specifically women and people of color on social media. This is specifically related to quote unquote controversy about consultancy in games, very specifically a company called Sweet Baby Incorporated, which is a consultancy that has worked on big games like Alan Wake 2, Marvel Spider-Man 2, I believe, if not the previous ones, God of War Ragnarok, big games on their credit. And what they primarily do, will be no surprise, given that they're being targeted, is help studios that have already decided that they want to, you know, represent minorities in their games. You know, they help them do it right, right? Is the understanding that I get. Consultancies are consulted all the time for this. But this one just happened to catch some heat for this. And a harassment group came together on Steam, of, you know, a community and a curator, you know, marking any game that this company has touched and serving as a pretty fertile ground for coming up with ways to, you know, make the employees of this company's life hell. Additionally, anybody who is looking into the movement, making their life hell. Literally everything that I just said will be quote unquote refuted by what they say. They'll say something about, no, they're the real racists, blah, blah, blah. All of it comes back to, and I can, you know, if I didn't block them, I could read you the replies, but it comes back to, don't put politics in my game. Don't, you know, don't shove these LGBTQ and black people, you know, into, you know, down my throat. I just want games to, it's all the same shit. It's the same playbook as 10 years ago, which is when Gamergate started, kicked off in earnest. It was working before then, but 2014 was the, was kind of the main point. And, yeah, it's coming again. They will deny being political at all. They will do a big whatabouts in terms of, you know, in terms of trying to make it, you know, that it's about anything else. But ultimately, at the end of the day, you know, they can say it is about journalism and so-and-so tried to dox us, i.e. report on what was happening here. All of it is about, you know, putting minorities in games. So be aware of that. Hopefully it's cut off. Hopefully this doesn't pick up. The fact that we're in an election year and the far right is stronger than ever at this point does not make me especially hopeful for this. But keep an eye out, because if it is like last time, it's going to get real gnarly.
Yeah. And, you know, don't pay attention to the fact that 10 years ago, it did literally nothing to slow down games getting better on that front.
Yeah.
Let's just try the same thing again and see if we get a different result.
Yeah, no, it's all just reactionary shit. In the final summation, reactionary shit that is very specifically targeting, you know, people. The replies that I got were annoying, but they were not like threatening like they would have been if it was, you know, a woman or somebody of color who had said that. But they're out in force. They're name searching around it. They're quote tweeting things on private accounts to kind of coordinate their action. Lots of randos who don't follow are just popping in and saying, you know, blah, blah, blah. Yeah.
Yikes.
Mm-hmm. So just a heads up.
How much of this can be avoided by not being on Twitter?
A good deal of it, actually. Yeah.
And I acknowledge that's not an option for some people. So.
It's not. And also, like, it can be avoided, you know, just like learning about it and seeing things of it. If you get the eye of Sauron, they will hound you to the ends of the earth. Yeah. So I, you know, when I say, oh, you can avoid it by not being on Twitter, I'm not trying to pull a, you know, just close your eyes, you know, how can cyberbullying be a thing meme? Not saying that. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying, like, you might not be aware of this if you are not on Twitter, which seems to be the main agitating space outside of Steam and outside of Discord. Yeah.
It makes sense given it's owned by someone who's pretty explicitly in the camp of the Gamergaters.
Yeah. And a lot can be said about the way Gamergate turned into the far right movement of the, the Trump movement, alt-right stuff, and just kind of broke containment. You know, the fact that people talk about doxing on the news as if it is, you know, just a regular thing. Like my mom would understand if I said doxing, what that meant means that this is like, it has broken containment and it's just in the blood. It didn't go away. It just got more diffuse. Mm-hmm. It's depressing on top of everything else. Anything else about that? Didn't mean to be too much of a bummer at the end, but I figure it's worth knowing, that there's, you know, that happening.
It'll fail just like all the other of these fail, and hopefully they, you know, the damage can be mitigated while it is in its death throes.
Hopefully. That's where we're at. And that sounds like a segment to me. So how do you all feel about buttoning it up?
Buttons!
The credit.
Thank you so much for listening to level number 493. We really appreciate it. If you want to help out the show, you can leave ratings or reviews. Our stuff is probably going to, if this is happening again, our stuff is probably going to get review bombed. So, positive reviews, do help, on that, but also spread the word, tell your friends, keep coming back, participate in the multiplayers, have a good time. Is what I would say. Mm-hmm. Also support on Patreon, things like that. Jala, you've already kind of alluded to what's going on, but can you sum up again with what's happening over at jalachan.place?
Yeah, so you can find an episode about Dishonored, the IP, which digs in part two. You can also, upcoming in a couple of more weeks, find an interview with the Godshard Chronicles folks. So both of those things are coming up on my show, jalachan.place, as the place to get those. And yeah, cool stuff.
Dennis, anything you want to say besides reminding people that you're going to be at Origin?
No, that's the big one.
Okay. Cool. Well, I have been Cole Ross. You can find me on Blue Sky at Cole Ross.
I've been Dennis Furia. You can find me on Blue Sky at Furia Games.
I have been Moxie. You could find me at Jollicon, but now I am back home.
Yeah.
Yes, indeed. And I am Jollicon in every place I may be found, including Jollicon.place.
And stick around for some titles. What have we got? Jala, what do you have?
I have Godzilla XCOM. And Switch Virgin.
I also had Switch Virgin.
I think that's our title, but...
Yeah, it probably
I mean, I might
be
calling it a little early, but...
No, I put the brackets around it. It is not bracketed yet. I meant to put the asterisk on it.
Yeah.
Sorry. My little notation for how this goes. Yeah.
I'll be surprised if it's not. But I do have a long list this week.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Ooh.
Yeah. So I'll blaze through these. I've got A Different Kind of Hop.
Mm-hmm.
Liquid and Let Liquid.
I also had Liquid and Let Liquid.
Car Rabies. You Received Chad Unit. And then finally, Give Us a Waluigi Movie, You Cowards.
You cowards. Cool. Moxie, you got anything?
I do not. So I'm a little avid this week.
No, that's fine. One half of this podcast currently is recovering from a long weekend. I extend extra grace. Is there any opposition to it being a Switch version?
No, that's good.
Cool.
Sounds good to me.
Cool. Then it is safe to say it is decided.